The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, showering's always a big issue, for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
It was like a witness league.
A bit of a nice sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
Hello and welcome to the great cricketer. What a week in the cricket, Sam Perry. What a week in the cricket. Everything's happening. Everything mostly bad, but there's lots of good as well in the cricket and the SCG test match. There's probably there's so many things to talk about in the broader sense of the cricket, but let's just focus specifically on the SCG. David Milan is on the show, international T20 number one batsman in the world. He's the best. He's the best in the world and he's on the Grade Cricketer podcast. This is all brought to you by Budgie Smuggler. Use the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping. It's budgiesmuggler.com. My name's Ian Higgins, joined by Sam Perry, Pezzy Lad.
He goes.
Fuck, man. There's everything in this. There's hog piles. There's normally.
Yeah.
There's blokes rubbing out centres. There's shadow batting. There's test matches. There's Rishabh Pant hitting 97. Cameron Green's hit some tall runs. There's stump marks. Fuck, it's everything. And also, it's really grade cricket. It's all there, isn't it? It's all there.
If you want it to be.
Now, we won't skirt around the edges here. There's obviously some negative. There's quite a lot of negative things to talk about.
And let's start there.
And let's start with the negatives. But before we do that, Pez, patreon.com/greycricketer. There's some stuff going on there. We obviously had the Hats Oglu interview last week. We've got a new one dropping this week as well, a little BBL special.
Yeah, Ben Menenti's on.
The quality of RCDC is, now we have RCDC Fridays every week on Patreon. Episode 22 involved a great story written in from one of our dear patrons. He has cerebral palsy. He's an umpire. And he likes sledging people. It's very, very funny. It's up now. I also want to preface this with one of the great Hall of Fame questions for RCDC is coming up in this show as well. I think so. That's patreon.com/greatcricketer. If you care to have more of this in your life, if not, about it.
No dramas.
Hey, mate, the third test, I thought Cummins bowled really well.
The cum dogs.
Yeah. Cider. Okay, mate.
Hey, could I, look, we're gonna roll into, some of the social things going on, how they're all connected and stuff like that. Stunningly good test cricket. I don't mean just to get it out of the way. This is the best series I've seen since I can remember cricket. It is heavyweight. It's 1v2. It ebbs and flows. It is completely different to the cricket we're normally used to seeing here. And I'm sure that part of the fracturing that's going on is connected to the pressure that's being generated from this series. I'm not saying blame good cricket for racism or allegations of it.
Cricket's too good.
You know, boorishness in our country.
Yeah.
But the cricket is sensational. Like on this, at the start of day three, I was just reflecting on the fact that we're halfway through the SCG test, halfway through the series. It's 1-1. The game was pretty even at that point. Rahane and Pujara were facing up to Cummins and Hazelwood. Just thinking, it has been sensational how teams have been coming back and forth. You made the point just off air before that matches tend to be swinging on. Minimal things like drop catches or miss runouts and stuff so close to those teams, which I thought was an excellent point. What India managed to do on day five was historic. You know, it was tough. We'll talk about what toughness is as well later in the show, but got to hand it to both teams from a pure cricketing perspective. It's been enthralling.
Yeah. Okay, mate. Well, we'll start from the top here because obviously it moves so quickly, isn't it? Because the conversation today... This is Tuesday we're recording this, the day that it will come out. So the conversation today is that the pain's sledging people and he's letting the country down, that sort of thing. But the biggest story probably, and we will be ranking the stories, is the alleged racism that's happened at the SCG. Now, we've spoken about this. We've spoken about the Black Lives Matter movement for a period of time here, basically since the UK summer.
Now, and we've been called BLM wankers.
Yeah, BLM tossers, I think.
BLM wankers. Here they are. Here we go. Winding up.
Yeah, fuck. There we go. Just play the cricket. Now, Pez, like, I have anxiety talking about this, mate, to be honest, because all I've ever wanted to do, including this show, is just make people laugh. That's all I want to do. I'm not a social expert. I'm not a racism expert, social justice issues. I'm none of those things. I'm just a fucking idiot with an internet account. I just want to make people laugh. That's all I want to do. I have anxiety about speaking about this issue because I don't know, man. I don't know what's happened. I don't think anyone...
It's not clear.
Anyone on the internet knows what's happened. And that's part of the problem because I've been sort of following this, as many people seem to have been doing so, on Twitter, which is the single worst place that you can have any sort of discourse about anything. And I think the issue is about this specific incident. I'm talking about what happened on day four with the six guys who got kicked out of the SCG, where Siraj stopped the game and he said, these guys are abusing me or racially abusing me. And then these guys are now like sort of the face of racism in the world, essentially. And like everything I've seen around this, including reports that that the guys from the SMH, Tom Decent, who's a very very good journalist, he interviewed people at the time, and there was people saying like they didn't say anything racist. The BCCI have said that the allegation is that people were yelling out "brown dog,"
and the day before, I think that was the
2 days before as well. It's all part of it. I don't fucking know. I'm just a guy trying to watch the cricket. I'm looking at like people's reactions in the crowd, and no one's like that whole thing about before that people got kicked out. It seemed all very confusing. No one was pointing the finger at them. The game is stopped. There's this great and very well spoken about history of great being expansive history of institutional racism in Australia. That is very unspoken about. Still, it seems it's underlying, and we don't even know how racist we are yet.
And we still police what racism is, although those who claim to experience it are telling us they feel like it is. Yeah, it's like, right. Oh no, we'll be the arbiters of whether it is or not.
Exactly. So when I talk about, now I'm talking about from my own instance now. So when I'm talking about having being a white guy talking to my white friend on a podcast about what racism is, I have anxiety about it because I don't fucking know. I will never know. Probably what it is like to be vindicated or vilified or made to feel small, as Ravi Ashwin said in the press conference after day five, for the color of my skin, my ethnicity, my creed, my religion, whatever. You know, I won't know what that feels like, and I will never know what that feels like, probably. So I'm sort of reticent to understand fully what's going on because at the moment, as we're recording this, there have been no charges laid by the SCG. There's all this fucking weird footage of like people saying like, oh no, if you listen between 7 and 8 seconds on this video for 19 seconds, you can hear someone yelling out "brown dog." I must have watched that video 50 times. Can't hear shit. Anyone who says they can hear something is that you can't. You cannot hear that. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen because it's 19 seconds and they were there for fucking 4 hours. So mate, I'm not saying like, oh, I don't believe it didn't happen. I just don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to say here. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I think two things can be true at the same time. Australia has an incredible history of sort of underlying racism and overt racism as well. But I don't know if what those guys said that day was racist. I think both of those things can be true. But if I feel like if I say like, I don't know if what they said was racist, I feel like if I say that, then people are like, oh, defending racists, are you? Nah, I'm not. I'm just saying I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful because it can appear. Perception is everything because while there's still stuff going on about what was said or wasn't said or whatnot, and it's important that, you know, racism is a high bar to clear because it's necessarily so because it's such a heinous thing to do. You want to get that right. But the mere act of seeking clarity about it can appear readying a defence for racists as well. All this goes to show is that there's many media platforms out there that are not appropriate to discuss these things because 280 characters is enough.
Yeah.
It's complex. It's grey. We're now having a bigger conversation around, a spectrum of racism, our ability to reflect on ourselves and boorishness. It is a little bit of a spectrum, I think. They are slightly different, but I do think the conversation has evolved a little bit. So it seems to me that there's a broader conversation going on about the way we behave, the way Aussies behave to visiting teams, and that too is going to be a very important conversation to have, you know, and to reflect upon. And you know, at the risk of spending too much time kind of defending these guys or whatever, when things like this happen, you know, I think that a sensible thing to do is to start to interrogate what are the systemic issues that contribute to that. Now, like you know. I have anxiety saying the following as well. Like, I have some level of sympathy for the young guys who were kicked out, in the sense that I could see why they would be confused about the messages they receive around things, issues of verbal jousting, you know, which is like so institutionalized in the way Australians enjoy their sport. Yeah, so you turn up to the ground, they're probably sitting rows away from literally a bronzed statue of Yabba calling something out. They've also got their captain in trouble at the moment for calling Ravi Ashwin a dickhead, among other things, you know, that may or may not have been said. Kerry O'Keefe made the point the other day that his number one question after playing 24 test matches is, what's the best sledge you've heard? You know, verbal jousting, whatever you want to call it, is part of our culture. They sit at the ground, they're being served alcohol as well all day. Mate, I've been 19 and 20 out at the cricket carrying on like a dickhead, and I feel, I cringe, like, looking back on it. So when I have sympathy for these guys in the sense that they were presented at that time as they as the face of potential racism, when really our issue is much broader and deeper than that. A symptom, you know, of something much deeper. And a conversation that's always important to have, I think. Don't have a lot of time for the whataboutery about it. You know, a lot of people will point out, well, things like this happen in the UK and happen, and then they do. But this is our country, you know, and we're going to deal with our things. So just because others do it doesn't mean that we don't have things that we need to sort out about it as well. You know, I actually think the whole, the entire episode is quite connected when you bring into things, bring in things like the things that Payne was saying. Andrew Simon's hot mic comments about Manus Labuschagne, they're all of the same theme. It's all about the way we one up, the way we verbally joust people, the way that sits on the line between abuse and banter, as Justin Langer said. It's all really cause for self-reflection. If you've got shit chat, just don't talk that much.
Yeah, it is. Now, I the racism thing, I don't, as I said, I don't know about. But like the abuse element, I'm exactly the same as you, Matt. I can think of instances in my life where I've either seen it or been the guy myself. Now, I've never yelled at anything racist, I will say that. Now, here's another part of my anxiety. I don't want to be sitting here on, you know, the podcast and be like, oh, I'm fucking holier thou. Let me preach from my high horse position, because I've made so many mistakes in my life in on a cricket field. Outside of that, I'm no one to be saying like, well, this is how you should live your life, because I'm a fucking idiot. But like, I remember one of the first times I ever went to the SCG, people listening for the first time, Pez and I are both from Sydney. So like all my cricket experiences, apart from recently, have been watching cricket at the SCG. One of the first times I ever went with my dad, and Devin Malcolm was filling down the boundary. And there was a guy behind me, big fat guy, and he was yelling out to Devin Malcolm, fucking move your big fridge or your big washing machine or a combination of those two things, that kind of abuse, stuff like that. I remember sitting in the SCG members maybe 15-ish years ago, VVS Laxman was fielding, a guy yelled out, I've said this before, I told this story before, someone yelled out, Laxman looks like he just sucked off a horse. You know, that kind of shit. I remember when I was maybe, first time I ever went to the SCG by myself, I was maybe 15, something like that. It was a one-day international, and Michael Bevan was fielding on the boundary, and I was with my mate, and we were doing the, Bevan, give us a wave, Bevan, give us, you know, and I think about it now, it's like, mate, you're a fucking dickhead, just shut up, because I'm now ruining the experience for everyone around me. Another time, I was at the SCG, Australia, New Zealand, ODI, when was that? I think it would have been about 18, 19 maybe. So, yeah, 2 years ago. I was like just hammered at like 2:30 in the afternoon, bought like a bottle of rum into the ground.
Yeah.
Drinking in the day sun, then like starting walking down. I was in the, then it was the top section of the Doug Walter stand. It's a different setup now. They knocked it all down. But back then I was trying to start like Mexican waves. People were like sitting with their partners and shit. I was like, oh, let's start a Mexican wave. 10, 9. It's like, you're a fucking twat, mate. Just fucking sit there and watch the cricket, you dickhead. So what I'm saying is like, I've been in a position where like, I've been the idiot at the ground who's like yelling out things. You know, I'd say I've never abused someone, but like I've been the guy who's fucking annoyed the experience for other people around, just being young and idiot, alcohol, these sort of things. And as this part of, now, I think about it now, I'm being like, mate, that's really stupid. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to even talk about it now.
I suppose the question is why? Like, why not just you, but like, why are we like that? Like, you know, what is it about the conditions of our country or sport that sets up that relationship where, you know, sledging others is part of the enjoyment of it, even felt like a little bit of a rite or part of the ritual of the day. That's where you start to look at leadership. You start to look at example. You know, when you're young, you just follow what you see to be right and enjoyable. I was the same. I couldn't wait till I was like 18, get out into the outer and drink a few beers and carry on. Because when you're with your mates, you think you're hilarious. Everyone thinks it's hilarious, especially when you've got a few beers in you and you carry on.
Well, it's interesting, mate, isn't it? Because that's sort of like a bit more than 10 years ago now, and it's like I would never do that now.
Yeah.
And it's almost like when I got to like 18, 19, first time out of the house kind of gear, you know, could buy alcohol at a bar at the ground, I was lionizing the things that I'd seen from when I was a kid when people could drink full-strength alcohol on the hill and Yabba and all that kind of gear, stacking up beer snakes, all that sort of thing. And that, to be fair, lots of that can still be fun. As long as no one's getting hurt, kind of thing, you know, but it is really strange that in Australia that's part of the consumption of sport. Mm. That's what it appears to be. And like you look at the videos and people yelling out "Siraj, give us a wave" and stuff. Now I'm just saying, like, I've literally done the same thing, not to an opposing player or anything like that, but it's like oh my god, why are you doing that?
Yeah,
why are you doing that? And you kind of hope as well that those guys who got kicked out of the ground, that, I mean, they must be in fucking pieces now.
Course, yeah.
I mean, I don't even know what they said, but yeah.
And this is the thing, right? Like, I don't want to dedicate too much time to the did they, didn't they around something racist said, though that is important. Yeah. But there's a bigger discussion, it's moved into a bigger discussion now. But what we're left with is images, you know, it's just so embarrassing again, whether or not it's happened or fair or not. And hopefully, that's all you know, happens in a really just way, if that's even possible now, with their faces being on TV and stuff like that. But like, you're left with the images, you're left with the still images, you're left with people overseas looking at it and going, oh, the Aussies are up to it again.
Back at it.
You can't talk about these things as isolated incidents because our country has form around this kind of stuff. Right. And so someone might say, listen, we can't actually isolate if they or there was other racist things said. But there's a lot of people around the country who'll be like, well, it does happen in Australia, you know. You only have to look at what happened with Adam Goods, and that just kept going on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know, we have form, we have priors on this kind of stuff. So that actually impacts the way people perceive it. I happen to think that it's broadly connected to the same theme as the way the Aussies have been carrying on. I mean, they've done great work in the last couple of years to clean up their image. Even if it's been keeping a lid on things, they've stopped carrying on like cunts since Lehman left, basically. And I think Tim Payne has done a very good job at keeping a lid on those things. Now, some people, particularly overseas, suspected that there was still a little bit of that in them. We did as well, but it's still good that they had kept a lid on it, but they let themselves down. You know, and the lid came off a little bit yesterday when they were under pressure. They cracked. It was actually soft. They're trying to look tough, but it was soft. Payne's apologised since, and I think essentially said the same thing. Toughness was India yesterday. No words, just actions. They're all in hospital. They're all injured. They've been bumped. You know, Australia's bumped the shit out of them. And they've, you know, secured a historic draw going into the Gabba. You know, on the flip side, 60 balls to go in the game, and Tim Payne's calling Ravi Ashwin a dickhead and saying, we can't wait to get you at the Gabba. So, I mean, there's 60 balls left in this game. Just get him out. You know, shut up and get him out. Now, I'm sure Payne will improve from that. He's 35 years old, he's also still a young person. He will improve. He will learn. It's funny how it's a part of our culture a little bit. It's like when it gets a little bit tough, people under pressure, we go the verbal route. Steve Smith thing, we don't know what the fuck's happened there. Some people are like, well, is he trying to scratch up pants crease, or is he just doing his kind of semi-OCD thing or whatever? Why be part of, why be in that conversation anyway? Why is he even doing that? You know what? Reason why people ask that question is not in and of itself the isolated incident, but because there are priors. It's like, there's form when that's it comes to this kind of stuff. So even if you weren't doing anything wrong, people will wonder if you were because of other stuff. Yeah. So they sort of, it actually disappointed me. You know, you're kind of undoing your good work here, boys.
I found it really interesting because it was all of it was fucking so great cricket from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I saw the Smith thing, the scratching up the crease, and people were just being like, I cannot. He's doing what? I was like, shut the fuck up.
One of the great genres for fucking Poms and Kiwis. You know, it's like, mate, Aussies behave.
Oh, he's at it again. Oh, no.
Aussies Behaving Badly would be one of the best fucking TV shows in the UK. Like Geordie Shore. Just like hate watching. Yeah, you know, yeah. Same with those fat shaming shows and stuff. If you just did a whole doco on Aussies Behaving Badly, that'd rate the fucking shit out of TV in the UK. Yeah. It's one of the great genres of all time.
Yeah. It's like Embarrassing Bodies, but just seeing Aussies overseas.
Because it just hits all the dark recesses of like the bad, all of our dark angels.
Yeah.
The Aussies, convicts. Yeah. Uncivilized people, unlike us. Yeah. We're great. We know how to play with decorum. We got our own problems, you know. We'll worry about our own backyard.
I just saw that and I was just the fucking, you know, the reaction to it. But you're entirely right. It's just like, no, but it's in the it's prefaced by everything that's happened before. And the conversations around like, has he learned his lesson, all this kind of shit. Lots of people have been saying today on Twitter that, again, the wonderful forum.
There's a good forum for it.
Really good forum for it. Because
you just got to summarize. You just got to get it sorted out. You got to summarize
just,
it.
A few words together. Yeah. And just be clean and perfect. Yeah,
clean and perfect. Get all the nuance.
And just people saying like, well, he does this like between every break and stuff. Probably does. He's weird enough.
Probably.
The guy was shadow banning in full whites before a dressing room. He probably was doing that. Yeah. Probably, you know. Yeah. But it's all just wrapped up in the thing of like the sledging and then like Ashwin hit Wade a bat pad and Wade's fucking charging at him. Yeah. They're sledging Marnus in a little bit of an aggressive way in relation to the Simons and Warne comments. Payne's having a chat, you know, drop catches. It's just all a bit angsty and stuff. Mate, but I also wonder, mate, I don't want to give him the out, but I will by saying this now. That I just wonder the impact of the bubble life and all this sort of thing and the intensity. And this is actually the point. This is actually the point of all of this thing, I think, is this is a fantastic series. Yeah. The cricket, the quality of the cricket, the quality of the wickets, although the SCG didn't really turn.
Yeah. If that was the MCG, there'd be a few people piping up.
There'd be riots.
Yeah.
We'd be storming Jollymont in a coup attempt. And the pressure to win this series, and it's India, and we don't like it how India owns cricket, and we don't like that because it's our game or whatever, it's fucking territorial shit, I don't know. And I just want to like the impact of all this kind of thing. They're stressed out. Mate, I was fucking in my apartment in a, you know, fucking box for 5 months. And if I was playing international cricket at the same time, as I was when I was shadow banning, it got a bit weird towards the end, if I'm honest. Yeah.
You didn't get picked in twos.
I kept getting beaten.
You might have been. By the invisible, army with that cover drive.
Invisible arm in my apartment. You know, like it must be high stress, but they just sort of flipped out. But the point is that like it's all great cricket, and all these guys that are playing this Australian cricket team have all still come through great cricket. And when you're stressed out, you revert to type. And I recognise so many of those things playing great cricket. What was happening at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? It was like India had already passed our score and they were just batting on.
Yeah,
just a bit of frustration. Yeah. I've seen it before where like, you know, guys start doing things. Like I've played in games where guys have literally marked up my centre piece as well, like with the marking of centre. They've scuffed that up. They walk past you a little bit too closely when the batsman...
They stand where you'd be standing.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, the captain will then change the field and he'll stand, like, literally on top of your toes, like, just going, no, square out. You know, just all these little sorts of things that are fucking annoying. And that's what Australia did. They just reverted to type and it got a little bit angsty, a little bit more pressure. It's funny if you look at it like that, but...
And you revert to type and you... That's sort of how you're conditioned as well. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think when they start carrying on like that, someone as experienced as Ashwin would be like, oh, we've got him here, you know? Yeah. If this is the sort of stuff you have to do, then clearly whatever you're doing with the ball is not working or in the field or whatever. And then, you know, dropping the catch after your sledge, well, that's the fucking the worst, you know, sort of bang bang, if you will. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. Can we talk about Warne and Simons and the
I didn't catch that.
The
what
hot mics. Well, like with on Warne and Simons, it's like
we're actually dropping
loathes to criticise hot mics.
Houses.
Yeah, glass fucking houses. One fucking day. So there is that. But like, there's two levels to it because I'm the Simons talking about hog piling. I've just thought about it so much in the last few days. Yeah. Like, just really jarring. You know, like I'm a relaxed Queenslander. I like fishing and beer. But if you fucking step out of line, and by line I mean a vaguely defined set of behavioural norms that me and my fishing mates will be the arbiter of in Queensland, I'm going to get every teammate to jump on you and I'm going to squeeze your guts out of your ass. Because I'm a relaxed Queenslander and I fish. And, you know, I'll give you a beer at the end like Stuart Law and keep it, you know, call it even.
We'll have a beer after.
It's just so jarring. Like, yeah. I think Warnie's talking about, like, they should have given him a bowl. And he sort of went along with Simon. It's like, he's getting fucking ADD pills. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, mate, we'd give him the hog pile. Just been responding to everything mates have said to me the last few days. Going, careful, mate. Hog pile,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's actually in relation to Brad Hogg.
Yeah.
They used to tackle him, then jump on top of him. That's how
normal. Yeah, I mean, because Marnus carries on and it is irritating, I find.
Yeah.
But who is the real weirdo in that situation?
Mate.
Because that's fucking weird too, just in a more 90s fucking chesty bloke way. It's like, I'm a real relaxed guy, but I'm fucking angry if you're not exactly the sort of person I want you to be.
And my response to that would be, I'll jump on top of you.
I'll squeeze your guts out of your ass, mate. It's very vivid punishment too.
Just seemed to flow. It was great riffing. Yeah. I want more than Simon's commentary, to be honest. Okay. Have we done enough about the behavioural issues and that sort of stuff? I mean, can we talk about the cricket now? Because the cricket's really good. Or do you want to say something else?
I don't know. I feel like there's a couple of other things to say about it, but I say one thing. Like, so many of these conversations like structure themselves around cultural lines or like good versus evil. You know, particularly our great friends overseas will be using this as evidence to, validate the idea that Tim Payne was always a cunt.
Well,
it was all a facade. It's just not like that. Like, he might have regulated his behaviour or others or the team's behaviour much better than they did in the past, and he's slipped up. You know, he's made a mistake. He's apologised for the mistake. I'm not saying therefore it's over. He probably did reveal himself a little bit more and what people suspected to be true, but that doesn't erase the good work before then. And I know this is hard because empathy doesn't sell very well in media. We've actually cost ourselves a job by sort of maybe trying to explain a few things or having some sympathy for those who've made mistakes. But it turns out when you give it a bit of time, it's okay. Like, he's fucked up. He's fucked up. He has revealed himself a bit. It does tarnish him a bit. He'll probably come back to Brisbane and he'll behave really well. Again, hopefully he plays well. I know that's not a good grabby line for the media, but that's probably – is that not – something approaching a sensible truth?
Mate, I tell you what's a fucking mistake. NASA is saying bowling first at the Gabba in 2003. That's a fucking mistake.
What about when he did that? What about mistakes you made? What about the time we were better at cricket than you?
Mate, I got to say, like, I had to just the anger on Twitter last night.
Yeah, to scroll for 4 hours.
Mate, I had to scroll through all of it to really scroll that. Get real deep into that.
Get much sleep?
Oh, yeah, mate, slept like a baby for 6 minutes. Fuck me. It's just a
couple of takes.
Mate, there's just the anger with it. And I think maybe again, you know, I give COVID the cop out, but like I just feel like everyone's a little bit angsty. You know, we just want our team to win. Nothing's normal. We can't go to the games. You gotta wear a mask. You can't even be racist anymore at the games, you know? No, but I mean, you can't, you know, it's fucking everyone's so angry about, like, oh, he's a dickhead and like, he's saying this and, you know, then there's actual issues of, like, problems with crowd behaviour. That's an actual issue. But the cricket's fucking good. It's really good.
If you get the word arrangement right on that tweet, though, like the outrage gives you a few likes.
Oh, watch it go.
Mate, fucking get a woke scold, right? Just get that, just a little bit of poetry in it, a nice little turn of phrase. Fucking watch those likes balloon up in the air as mentions for fucking days.
And then you get followers, and then what does that mean? I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Fucking dopamine, scold the shit out of someone behind your screen.
Hey, Bukowski batted well.
Hey, Bukowski's a young golden retriever puppy boy. Felt good. He's got an organised...
What does this mean? What does any of this fucking
mean?
He's
got an organised game. Yeah. I'll watch that for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
He looks organised. He played down the ground. Mm. He made 62. It was safe. It was really nice. Mm. Yeah, everything was really innocent at the start of this game, wasn't it? You know, like...
Big front pad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Blow that off, yeah, actually. And compulsive hooker as well.
Yeah.
You know, there were the biggest issue at the start of this test match was the weather issues. It was Melburnians, having their annual festival of love for their own weather because it's a bit hot here when it's raining in Sydney.
Mate, I got to say on that, sorry, this is the fucking most minuscule point, but it is really interesting that like the beginning of January, the first week in January in Sydney, first 2 weeks, it rains in Sydney.
Yeah. They should move it.
Mate, it's fucking crazy because I remember like playing finals in when I the very few times that my team made final. I might play for finals, did you? Fuck, speaking of that,
crowbar that
I'll go fucking 10 minutes on that kind of gear. Like the first week of finals in Sydney for grade cricket always rained. Like that's like end of March. It's just fucking weird. The patterns are like, it's almost like everything's connected, but it's not, as we know. It's just a man in the sky doing it.
Yeah. Magic Sky Daddy God. but yeah, it was like, you know, it was such an innocent start. You know, weather issues. Oh, Pekowski looks good. Yeah. Oh, is he a compulsive hooker? Oh, Smith's playing a lone hand when everyone's crumbling around him. It just felt really, you know, Gavaskar was talking about his weird categorization of hundreds with father-in-law hundreds and granddaddies and babies and stuff. So that was really nice and innocent. We could discuss those things, you know.
So if you didn't catch that, Sourav Ganguly was Sourav Ganguly, fucking hell. Sonny Gavaskar was I was thinking about Sky SG. Daddy Data. Sunil Gavaskar was talking about the rankings of hundreds. 100 is a baby 100. He was going through 150, 200, 250, 300, and 250. So 200 was a daddy 100, yeah. And then 250 was a father-in-law 100. What? I can't remember what 300 was.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he scored each of those ones. A few runs.
Yeah. It was good, runs. Good stick.
Yeah, he was a good stick. but, mate, amazing cricket. It feels like so many players did things of repute, you know. Cameron Green hit 80-odd. Pekowski, 60. Cummins was just unerring, irrepressible. Hazelwood wasn't far behind him. Smith hit 210 runs in the match. Labuschagne, 90 and 70. Mm. Like, there's a lot of guys. Who, and then for India, I mean, Rishabh Pant's innings in the fourth innings yesterday, after having been fucking destroyed on his elbow a few days before that, come out number five, inspired decision to do that. And then, yeah, interestingly, like, Australia couldn't do the business in the fourth innings, you know, and I think Lyon was a bit benign. Some really good batting, probably a flat wicket, but that, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Like, in retrospect, with Green, you probably have three. I know you can only bowl 10 overs, but you've got three seamers there. Maybe a second spinner would have been good, but we don't want to break up the golden trio because that's our, you know.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's always like, well, we didn't win this game, so how do we fix it? And they'll be like, then we'll fix it. Then they'll have the right remedy. Mm. We'll then lock in the Rubik's Cube and that'll be like that forever.
Pajara, oh, he was a bit slow in the first innings. That was rubbish. It's like, that's how he plays, mate.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And everyone's scoring rate is down, and he's a typically slow scorer anyway. Yeah. So it's like just, he scored 77 in the second dig.
Yeah, Ashwin's batting. Ashwin hasn't hit a 50 since 2017, I heard. So he's just played a great innings. Yeah, really? He's turned back the tide, yeah.
Yeah. Longest India have batted in a fourth innings I saw since like 1970 or something like that. Amazing. Yeah. Also, they could have won it had like Vihari not done his hamstring. They only finished 70 runs behind.
Man, it's just a shame that like Pant's innings was unbelievable. Completely changed the match, which is where it was going. Wicked in the morning, he comes in number five, he's injured. Everyone else is fucking injured or in hospital.
Gotta be lucky, but yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, how tough are these guys? And, you know, and they do it in their own way. They don't do it in the way we do it.
Mate, let's talk about the depth of India at the moment. Like, I think I might say this last week. This is a fucking generational Indian team.
It's going to get better.
Like, I was like, oh, no, once these guys go through, there's actually no more Indians coming through. Fair few coming through, I reckon. Yeah. So unavailable at the moment, obviously Kohli. Ishant Sharma's not even travelling. Yadav injured. Shami injured. KL Rahul's gone home. They've obviously got concerns for Jadeja and Vihari, who are probably not going to play. I mean, Vihari's not going to recover from a torn hamstring in a week. Jadeja's broken his thumb, hasn't he? Oh, he's got a fracture and a break. In his thumb, I believe it is. So he ain't playing either. So they're missing six of their frontline first teamers, basically, and they're still competing with Australia in Australia at this level. It's
lost
like
every toss.
Respect.
They've lost every toss. They've had the second of it, like the, you know, Australia's had the choice of the conditions every game as well.
Well, mate, I've got to say,
it's fucking set up for the Gabba. Mate,
if Australia,
beautifully.
Fantastically so. Mate, if they were batting in the fourth inning, sorry, the SCG, could they have batted 120 overs against Ashwin? Fucking splitting cobras down there.
Yeah, exactly.
So that noise for the visual.
I didn't understand how he bowled, but when you made that noise, now I get, that's tough to play. Yeah. They raised $3 million for the McGrath Foundation as well, just to throw it out there. You know, there are positive things that happen. It was just a sensational test match, marred by ugly scenes that you just wish didn't fucking happen, but... They do. Got to keep working on it.
Yeah.
Got to keep working on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it can also be true that the cricket is fucking magnificent.
Mm.
It's extremely compelling.
So we go to the Gabba now.
Yes.
So can Indy win that? Now, let me give you the record, Pez.
Okay.
Of Australia's record at the Gabba. Someone wrote in saying, why is Australia so good at the Gabba? Well, let me tell you, fair listener. So they've played 50, Australia have played 55 times at the Gabba. They've won 33, drawn 13, tied 1 and lost 8. So Australia has not lost the Gabba in 28 matches, which goes back to 1988. They haven't lost a test match since 1988 at the Gabba. Pretty good record. I don't know what to say to that. It's a fucking, it's England's Edgbaston, the graveyard of many teams. They go there, they can't win. But can Australia face Bumrah and the Gabba? He's a pretty good bowler.
Well,
Siraj has bowled well.
Yeah, like I think the conventional thinking is that, oh, what happened in the last game will happen in this game. So if India finished on top, you know, Australia's got 130 overs in their legs. Rahane finally wins a toss, has a stick. Australia's tired, you know, maybe. But the way international cricket tends to go is like what happened in the last match doesn't seem to impact that much what happens in the next match. Like teams do just yo-yo depending on who gets the advantage. But like, there's something pretty, something like I use the word tough, it's something pretty robust and resilient about this Indian team. And they're obviously all worldies. They're obviously two really close teams. Australia will have the advantage at the Gabba. I mean, when you know, that wicket will be very, very, good. Sorry for the Aussie quicks. Lyon tends to bowl there as well, I think, you know, from memory. So, you know, a couple of guys have come back into form. So, you know, Australia, you'd imagine, would still have the advantage.
Mate, it's really fascinating because Pekowski looks like he's dislocated his shoulder. That's what that injury looked like. So it's probably going to be pretty unlikely to go to the Gabba, see how that goes.
Yeah, obviously. I heard hopeful. And that, and that Warner's not looking good.
No good. Okay, so then they're going to make a change, which means that Harris will come in, I presume.
Harris in for Warner, or
unless they go to Wade, dive in the batting, and then
Wade open, and head
to come back in. I don't know, one of those two options, I guess. But it's interesting. What if India finally win a toss? Gabba always does something in the first session. Always does a bit early, to use the great cricketer cliche. And Australia are fucking 3 for 50 at lunch on day one. Like 3 for 50, slow scoring. But you know, it's all possible. It's all possible, and Australia's still so heavily rely on Smith and Labuschagne. I know Cameron Grew at 84 in the second. He's batted really well. But if you gun to your head, who's going to score a 50 for you for Australia? It's if Smith doesn't and Marnus doesn't, then we're going to beat Graham.
Well, I think in like just raw cricketing terms, you know, the thing that went wrong for Australia in this last test is that they couldn't get them out in the fourth
innings.
You know, Lyons didn't bowl with the requisite penetration, and I don't think, look, it's just in the cold light of day, it's unlikely they're going to have that problem at the Gabba, unless it's a real road or something. But like, the Gabba is usually going to provide enough assistance for the quicks to do their damage, because it's the quicks who really do it. You know, Lyon is a symbiosis bowler for Australia. Like, you have to understand how he works with the other quicks, sort of in and of himself. He's a very good bowler, I think, but like, you know, rarely that kind of match winner against the odds for them. So I think the Gabba will be really helpful to Australia. They played pretty good cricket all the way up until, you know, a third of the way through the final day. So they'll think that they can improve on that.
So Australia 4-0?
Australia 4-0, but India the good guys, were the villains. Are we the baddies?
Yes. Yeah, we are. Australia's the bad guys. All right, well, mate, we spoke to David Milan. Now, we spoke to David a week ago. When was that? Was that a week ago?
Something like that.
So
we're not going to ask. You're not going to hear a question of what's it like to play against the Aussies. Are they cunts?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Wonderful chat to him. Very nice man as well. And that's the most important thing. Who's a good bloke and who's not?
That's right.
But, of course, Pez, this is brought to you, as ever, by Ponting Wines.
By Ponting Wines. Use the code GETAFEW at checkout to get 10% off a case. Very proud to be sponsored by Ponting Wines, because his name is good. He's a good cricketer.
He's good stick.
Yeah, real good
Hell
stick.
Of a stick.
Hell
yeah.
of a stick.
Struggled in India, though, so you got to keep that in mind.
That's true.
Mate, speaking of what about the stats for, you know, Smith in, like, the top three big boys? Unfortunately, Joe Root slipped to one side, which is fair, because he ain't a big boy no more, as we discussed back in the UK summer. But the big three of Williamson, Kohli and Smith – and it was like the averages, who scored the runs, who scored the most amount of test hundreds. Kohli and Smith are both on 27.
Joined border.
Williamson's just on 24. Yeah, joined border. He was pretty good. About 7,500 test runs each for all of them, I think I'm right in saying. But then like the away record is fucking see you later. Like Smith averages 57, Kohli averages 44, Williamson 42. I mean, fuck, 57 away?
And mate, like that's the unreal. Winning and performing away from home, I think, in this current test environment is the marker of truly great players. You know, that's what you do if you're good. Not at home comforts where you've kind of grown up in those conditions. Can you apply or do really well in conditions that are foreign to you? He averages 57. The fuck is that? The
fuck is that?
The fuck is that?
What the fuck is that?
That's not like, oh, I just like bouncy pictures and getting on the front dog.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you serve it up to me. It's going off my hip through leg.
No,
get me out.
You got to say to our fair Kiwi listeners that that's not fair on Kane because Kane doesn't play away from that. That's the system. He's actually caught in the system. He's
systematically excluded from that conversation.
New Zealand's next away tour is 2022 in England. So they don't really play as much. Mm. Not his fault.
He also doesn't get to play against New Zealand.
A couple of runs against Mitch Santner.
Yeah.
Colin. Mm. Yeah, play to him. Anyway, yeah, Ponty Wines, get a few. Okay? Here's David Milan.
Come on, guys. Let's make the use of Marnie while we got him, guys. Scored a few runs this test. He's back, boys.
Yeah.
Couple of runs and he's back.
No, just fucking bat properly. Bat properly, bat properly, bat properly.
Do something, that or his ADD.
I'm going to be older than sitting with Roy and Warney saying the same thing.
You have to give him the hog pile. Mate, you keep that shit up, we're going to squash your guts out of your ass.
Back properly.
You have to give him the hog pile. Hog pile. Mate, you keep that shit up. Hog pile. Mate, you keep that shit up. Hog pile. Mate, you keep that shit up. Hog pile. Mate, you keep that shit up, we're going to squash your guts out of your ass. It's in your ass, it's in your ass, it's in your ass.
Boy, stay low, man.
Okay, he goes, joining us on Zoom is a man with 11,000 first class runs, 26 tons there at the time of writing. 35 matches for England across all formats, an incredible Ashes ton against Australia in Perth, 140 there. And he's the world's number one batsman in international T20s. He's with the Hobart Hurricanes at the moment, and he's on the line to the great cricketer, David Milan. Cheers for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Let me start from the beginning, David. You were born in suburban London. I'm just telling you things you already know.
Yeah.
You spent your formative cricket years in South Africa, where you made your first-class debut in early 2006. So I want to know, like, where did that leave your club cricket? Like, where were you initiated into adult cricket? Like, were you brought up in more of a macho South African vibe or a genteel English introduction? You know, what's your DNA for cricket?
I'd say it was the macho South African one. The way the system works out there, you play school cricket until you're 18, and then once you finish the school cricket, you go straight to club cricket. So whereas England's slightly different. You actually play, I think you play club cricket if you're under a school that plays cricket. So you can start playing club cricket at 15. So I started playing for a club called Wellington Cricket Club, which is about 20 minutes outside where I grew up in South Africa. You know, a couple of good players, a couple of ex-SA under-19 players and a couple of ex-first-class players that played there. So, you know, it was good hard cricket. I learned a new vocabulary playing in the league, in the Boiler League. There were some tasty games, you know, but it's, you know, it was all part of the game, and it was something that you were used to at the time. So it was nothing different to, or you didn't think that much was different in cricket. And then I'd probably say my first, after I made my first class debut, I went over to England and then, you know, played club cricket in England. And that was slightly different as well. Couldn't score a run actually when I went over. Some of the club was quoted as saying I was the worst overseas player they've ever had, which is probably fair at the time, which always happens when someone comes over. You expect the most. The third score runs are absolutely rubbish. So probably deserved that one.
I love how you can be the world's number one like T20 batsman in international cricket and still remember that stuff. You know, you still remember like the club that you went to thinking you were terrible.
Yeah,
I don't forget that stuff. Sits with me that.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, in Australia, I know you haven't played grade cricket in Australia. We'll come to that in a second. But in Australia, the sense is that, like, while you might learn a little bit on the field, it's what you learn off the field that's most important. Is that the same in South Africa? I mean, you learn how to manage yourself in the sheds, in the showers, if you will. Mm. You talked about a different vocabulary, you know. Like, what are the sorts of intangibles you learn in South African club cricket that help you in life or actually hinder you?
Yeah, no, I think it's brilliant. It's a great learning curve. it teaches you to get around new people. You know, I was fortunate enough to play for Wellington, and then I moved over to a club called Belleville just outside Cape Town, you know, where they play two-day cricket as well. So you go into a new club, you're learning to get to know new people, how to fit into a different environment. You know, you have Afrikaans-speaking people, English-speaking people, you know, people from all different types of and walks of life. So you actually get to learn how to incorporate yourself with different cultures and ways of life as such. You know, I've still got some of my best friends as well from playing club cricket. And it's amazing how you never forget those days, and there's always stories that you talk about. You know, so I actually think playing club cricket teaches you a lot about yourself, because especially when you start, you're actually quite young and you're playing in a man's game. You know, you come from school cricket and you start playing in a man's game, so you actually grow up slightly quicker. You know, you're taught to get on the beers pretty quickly as well, which is might not be the best thing for the long term in life, but it you know, it teaches you you know, the social skills in life to actually have a good time with people and you know, get along with people.
I think we were talking to, it was Neil Wagner who we're talking to, obviously spent time in South Africa as well, and he was saying that some of those provincial games are some of the spiciest games he's ever played. And I'm scared just thinking about those games. Anyway, I want to ask you, David, that I think your old man, he played first class cricket as well, and your brother played for Loughborough. So I presume the entire family is just a family of genetic freaks, good at all sports.
Yeah, my father talks it up, and then when you look at his stats, he averaged 2 with a bat and like 70.
He knows exactly what he averaged.
He gave it massive, and then when you actually, what's the Crick Info or something, and it comes up with your stats, so you can't hide from those anymore.
Yeah,
my brother played a bit of Loughborough. He was in the MCCM cricket. So he actually came and played club cricket out here somewhere. I'm not actually sure where he played. But he actually absolutely enjoyed it. And funny enough, he played club cricket here and realised that there was more to life than playing cricket and decided to give up cricket. Get on the booze and go to university. So that was the Aussie system for you. That taught him the right way. But cricket's always been in the family. My old man's cricket mad. He absolutely loves it. Ever since I can remember, he's given us a bat and thrown us a ball. And, you know, I think his greatest moments were probably when I was 13 or so, my brother was about 11, and he used to pad us up, and he had this whole, because he was a bowler, so he had this whole suitcase of Duke's balls that he'd shined up and polished, and you know the Dukes do also, to get us on these concrete slabs, and he used to steam in, and he was only like 45 or so at the time, and he used to steam in, and he used to just absolutely rip us a new one. So I think that was probably the highlight of his life, to be honest, and thankfully, we got to the stage where all the balls were done, and you know, then at least batting has got slightly easier. So,
yeah. You're just saying that to your brother, like actually, if you just look at the concrete slab, it'll just we'll be able to see off the new ball.
Well, I bowled leg spin, and my brother bowled off spin, so we were literally trying to hit each other out of the nets all the time to have some sort of fun. Because otherwise, it was like blowing your glove off for length, so it wasn't there. So we cashed.
You mentioned the Aussie system before and your brother coming out here. I noted from a piece in 2017, it said you'd never been to Australia, but you did turn down a chance to play with Sydney University. I don't know if there's much to that. I thought I'd ask the question because I know Kevin Peterson had played at Sydney Uni before that. Did you just get a few stories and decide, no, that's not for me?
No, not as such. So I think for me, so the guy that I used to live with or helped me when I went over to England is a guy called William Fruin. He's got some good connections with, I think it's Danny Waugh. I think him and Danny Waugh are quite close. And I think he was involved at Sydney Uni. I think that was the connection. And he's been sort of, he tried to push me for 2 or 3 years to come and play club cricket. And he said he'd sort me out at Sydney University if I really wanted to come over and play. But, you know, at the time I was playing two-day cricket in South Africa, I had all my friends were out there. I had all the facilities. I had coaches that I could work with. So for me, it just made sense. Unless I desperately wanted to get out of my comfort zone then, you know, my family was still in South Africa. So, and, you know, out of my comfort zone was almost going to play county cricket in England. So I was under pressure for 6-7 months of the year at a high intensity. So for me to go back to South Africa and actually play with my mates, have all the facilities that I needed to help keep me improve, was probably the only reason that stopped me coming to Australia.
Sydney Uni would have needed another player at that point.
Yeah, we start in twos.
Yeah, start in twos, yeah.
you must have an affinity with Australia though, David. I mean, obviously you got your test century, 140 at the WACA. I note that Ed Smith, national selector, sort of said that your game was more suited to playing away. Obviously, there's a big series here next year, another Ashes series. You must have your eye on that. So, are you playing in the Big Bash this year as a bit of a PR play to make Australians love you?
Well, I don't think they love many Englishmen, I can tell you that much. Having crowds back, it's amazing how many times you get told you're rubbish again.
Fucking hell. Yeah.
But playing in the Big Bash is something I've always wanted to do. It's, you know, from the outside, watching the tournament has been fantastic. You know, so to be, finally be part of that is a fantastic experience. Obviously, quarantine and all that has changed that slightly this year. But, you know, the tournament itself and the brand is fantastic to be part of. You know, it has said, you know, that I'll probably be better suited for overseas cricket, but he hasn't picked me on one overseas tour since he said that. So I don't know if that actually was what he meant. But, I'd love to play in the Ashes again. Whether I'm good enough or not is a different story. I'll leave that to Ed to decide whether I'm good enough or not. But, you know, I've gone away and scored runs since I've been dropped in county cricket. So now it's up to him to decide whether he needs me or not, because there's some fantastic young players that are playing for England at the moment that have done very well.
We know in cricket that it's often more, you know, it's about more than runs or on-field performances, particularly in different countries as well. There's all sorts of other factors that come into play. I noticed that, you know, you've obviously played under Trevor Bayliss, who's an Aussie coach, who did coach England's side. You had your formative years in South Africa. You've dominated English domestic cricket for a long time before you got to go. We know in Australia there's a certain, you know, archetype of person that tends to succeed more than others, with the way they carry themselves and helps with a sense of acceptance. Do you get that sense in England as well? You know, does it help to come from a certain background or know certain people or carry yourself a certain way to get those advantages or those opportunities that others may not?
I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think the English system's quite tough in the sense that if you come from the outside, you have to, you know, you're not known to the system, you're not known to the coaches, that you haven't been identified with 15, 16, 17 and played England in the 19 to get into counties and things. So it's, you know, I find sometimes because you come out of that system, which is a good thing, you have to work harder and you have to score more runs to sort of get noticed and get more opportunities, which teaches you good lessons in life, especially with cricket, that it's, you know, it doesn't just happen and given on a plate. So you end up having to work extremely hard for it. I wouldn't say there's any sort of secret to it, or because you've come from somewhere else, you sort of get more opportunities as such. It's I think with anything, the more you perform, the more you get looked at, no matter what sort of walk of life you're in. You know, very rarely do you sort of just get identified because you've got the talent. So you know, Trevor Bayliss was fantastic. It was actually Brad McNamara. I think he was a Channel 9 at the time, and he was close mates with the guy that I stayed with, that was close mates with Danny Waugh as well. You know, and he sort of, I bumped into him and he was about 10 pints deep, I think. And he was sort of saying, well, look, it's under Trevor Bayliss, if you play well and you show that you've got the basic things, you know, he'll pick you. He's not going to sort of overlook certain things. He wants the best to play. And thankfully, I got picked in a game. I got given an opportunity, you know, and I got picked in Test cricket. I think it was a month later when, you know, so unexpectedly, you know, and Paul Farbrace actually said to me, he said, Trevor Bayliss sort of watched me play that first game and said, well, you know, he goes forward to the full ball and he goes back to the short ball. Like, why haven't we seen this guy before? And, you know, that's pretty simple stuff, being going forward and back. And that just sums Trevor Bayliss up. Like, brilliant coach, like, creates a fantastic environment for you to be able to go out and perform. And it just keeps it so simple, which is what you want in national cricket. When it starts getting complicated, that's when too many things start going on.
Fuck, Test cricket's really easy. You just go forward to the full ball. I was going back my half life. That's
just getting the front.
They don't bomb, especially when you're facing Cummins and stuff.
I wonder, because there are so many Aussies, you know, knocking about in the UK county system, David. And there was actually a really interesting story this week about Stuart Law and Shane Watson and their relationship with each other, and they had this really spicy relationship where Shane Watson left Queensland, then Stuart Law didn't like that. Then they had this like running battle for almost a decade or years anyway in Sheffield Shield. And I know that Stuart Law was the coach at Middlesex for your last 2 years. You spent 13 years there, and then before he moved to Yorkshire. And I wonder if there's like a generational thing of like maybe butting heads or different ideas or anything, because I know your last year at Middlesex, I think you guys finished eighth in Division Two of the county championship, but you yourself scored 1,000 runs, and you might have been a bit like, well, I've got things I want to achieve here. I want to win some trophies, and Stuart Lawn might have been coming at a different time, but was his ideas, did his ideas of coaching or anything clash with you, or was it just that you wanted to move on to a different challenge?
I just needed to move on to a different challenge. You know, there was, I think to some extent there was a bit of a, you know, they're trying to rebuild again, the club. So whether that was Dewey or Angus Fraser or the CEO, whoever was doing the direction, whereas, you know, I sort of felt a little bit like, you know, I'm 33 years old, I want to win trophies. I don't want to be in a 3 or 4 or 5 year rebuilding period. And by the time we start winning, I've retired. Mm. You know, that was that. I also felt like I wanted a fresh challenge. You know, I felt I wanted to get, you know, somewhere where I could keep starting with a new coaching structure, starting with a new team where you have to, you know, start from the bottom, keep pushing yourself from a fitness point of view, from a batting point of view, to keep being hungry to score runs. Because, you know, I still wanted to play test cricket. I still do want to play test cricket if I'm good enough. I still felt I was there and thereabouts, the white ball stuff. You know, the last thing I wanted was to become stale. Not that that would have been through a coaching staff or through Middlesex itself. That would just be from being in the same place for so many years and doing the same things over and over and over. So, you know, that was more the reason that I left, was, you know, just to give myself some sort of kick up the backside to keep wanting to get better and improving. You know, I actually think that I've reaped the rewards from that, of going away and having a new environment where I've have to start from scratch again, start from the bottom. It's not just expected, and you are expected to score runs, so to have that pressure on you again, you know, is a nice feeling.
Mm. Well, you are dominating, David, and you're doing particularly well in the T20 format. How good is it that you can be the world's best T20I batsman? Recently, you dominated against South Africa. You average 50 in that format, and the thing most people want to talk about is whether or not Owen Morgan likes you.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this stuff. It was, you know, after the New Zealand series, when was it, like 14, 15 months ago, whatever it was, suddenly me and Morgs hate each other and we don't speak to each other and we all this stuff, which is, you know, absolutely absurd. I've said this before, in the 14 years or 13 I was at Middlesex, whatever it was, you know, we've never had an argument. Like, so, you know, it's amazing how people sort of jump on something and they look into something, and then one guy says something in some sort of way, and then suddenly everyone jumps on something. So it was quite funny to watch and to listen. And, you know, you don't get picked for a game, but you've been told before the series you're definitely not playing the game, whether you scored 400s or you get 4 noughts. And then suddenly, because you're not playing the game, it's because you've fallen out or something. So it's absolutely absurd. You know, that I don't think anything like that takes place in international cricket, and especially under Owen.
Well, that's just the nature of cricket, though, isn't it? Like, as in, you know, we always just pick at the thing that seems a little bit wrong, even though so many other things can be right. And like, you know, to that end, I was curious to ask you, like, you've spoken so much about being the world's best T20I batsman, and at the start you said, oh, well, it felt a little bit weird. I'm just sort of putting words in your mouth there. But I'm sure it's something that you're very proud of, and it reflects wonderful results at that level. I just wonder about, just with our grade cricket experience, what you've observed the reaction from your mates around you being, like teammates and stuff like that. Have they been a little bit like, oh, what's that about? Or, you know, like, oh, yeah, really proud of you and stuff like that. But have they been a little bit like, oh, what's it, you know, what's this? Oh, that's normally Coley or something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think initially when I got there, because I haven't played a lot of games, you know, you sort of look at it and go, gosh, how is that sort of the place, you know, when you have someone like Coley and Bubba and these guys that have been so unbelievable for 50, 60, 80 games, you know, to suddenly have a title that says that you're a title that says you're a better player than them, when, you know, deep down you probably know you're not anywhere near as good as them. You know, so to have that title was, you know, initially it was quite, you know, I was quite taken back by it. Obviously I know how the system works. It's done over consistency over a period of time. And thankfully, unfortunately, England have actually played a lot of 2020 cricket over that time. A lot more cricket than a lot of the other teams in 2020, so we've had more opportunities. You know, and then going to South Africa and having to actually back it up after having that tag, you know, I think I was really proud of that. You know, whereas sometimes when you have sort of tags like that, you can almost fold under pressure and you can sort of let it get to you and stuff like that, which I've tried my best not to listen to that. I mean, batting out here, it's not really helping as well with every time I walk out to bat, the announcer goes, the world number one batter or something like that. And you're like, oh, you're setting me up for a first bowler or something here. So, you know, so, but, and then with the boys in the team, it's actually been quite funny because, when it was initially, you know, Joss and Morgs both like, oh gosh, number one, mate. Well done. Awesome work. And then, you know, Moeen always gives me a little bit of like a little bit of an elbow here or there to sort of wind me up about how bad I actually am and stuff like that. So you keep quite grounded and stuff. But I think, you know, I think the one thing about the England team is, you know, we obviously don't really worry about who's number one and who's number 100 and stuff like that. But, you know, they are very good at enjoying each other's success, which is what I think has made this England white ball team so good, is that they really are pleased that people score runs and they really enjoy it, because, you know, it might be my good 3 months that I'm having, and then, you know, when I start having a bad 3 months, it could be Jason Roy that has a good 3 months, or Johnny Bess, or Morgs, or Stokes, or whoever it is. So there's always someone that's with the quality of players you have that's doing really well at the time, and the boys really do enjoy it, and it's really good watching those guys as well, and watching each other when people do get going and are playing well, because it's exciting. You know, we're fans ultimately at the end of the day as well, even though we are playing within the same team. You know, we do enjoy watching each other whack it all over the park, and whoever it is on the day, you know, we enjoy that.
Mm. You've obviously played all over the world in many great franchises, you know, all over the world, but you haven't played in the IPL yet. How's that happened?
Oh, you know, look, I'm not saying I'm good enough to play in the IPL by any stretch of the imagination, but I've only put my name in the IPL once, you know, because I've wanted to play Test cricket. And if you don't play the first 6 or 7 games for in county cricket, you actually miss out on a chunk to be able to put your name forward. You know, this year is slightly different. I spoke to Yorkshire, and Yorkshire allowed me to put my name in. So whether I get picked up or not is a different story. You know, there's unbelievably good cricketers. You know, if you look at the Indians, you know, the top three Indian batters, you know, in each team are fantastic. And then you throw in the De Kocks and the Warners and the Kane Williamsons and the Johnny Bairstows and Lins and guys like that are, you know, hardly even played, sat on the bench. You know, you can understand how tough it is to get into this tournament. So, you know, if I'm lucky enough to gig this year, this year, we are 2021, yeah, so I don't even know which year it is. So 2021, if I get a gig, then, you know, that'd be fantastic and it'd be a dream come true. And if not, then, you know, you understand why, because it's just such a tough tournament to get into.
Yeah. I wonder, I was just looking at some of the sort of highlights over the last few days in the Big Bash League, and it's like, I just noticed like guys are getting a little bit edgy. I just wonder if like guys are getting a bit bored in the bubble, a little bit of frustration boiling over. I saw, was it Mark Steckerty was having a crack at Ollie Davies the other day, and then Bilbo, our close personal friend Sam Billings, you know, had to get involved. And then last night Matt Renshaw gave Kane Richardson a massive send-off, and it's like, I haven't seen this before in the Big Bash. It's just guys getting bored in the bubble, or what's going on?
It might be a few frustrations building up. I think as well, because you play against the same team twice, you know, you can play against someone this week and he can rub you up the wrong way, and then, you know, you don't see him again for another 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it is, and then you play against him again and sort of forgotten. You know, so I think there's a bit of needle in that, which is, it's quite good as well, because, you know, sometimes playing these leagues and everyone's each other's mates, and someone says something and then everyone starts laughing, and then it's all like, oh, a bit jokey. So it's actually quite nice to see the boys have got a bit of passion. And, you know, it's been tough, you know, these new rules and things have made it, you know, a different brand as such, if you want to make it that way, because you don't know what a good score is. Bowlers are bowling at different times, and bowler gets you out and he's happy and he gives massive celebration, and the next time you get him and you tell him to do one, and it's all sort of going along with that. So it's it's good to see, actually, as long as it doesn't cross the line, get personal, get a bit silly, like maybe last night did in that game that I watched, you know, where people are sort of walking at each other and stuff. But if there's a few words, I think that should just be allowed. That's all part of the game.
Yeah. Is anyone you're lining up to have a few words at? You're the number one.
I'm hanging at the moment. I'm getting abused enough from behind me, so I'm just going to keep looking forward and quiet until someone comes at me.
It would have been funny if you called somebody out in this cast, which is publishing next week. Anyway, Dava Milan, thanks so much for joining us and for your time, mate. All the best with the Hurricanes and the Ashes ambitions and being world number one and all of that and beyond.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time, guys.
Okay, here goes as you and the fair listener will know. There's a mutant virus.
Why is that funny? Sorry.
The virus has mutated.
It's the look in your eyes when you said that.
Yeah. There's a mutant virus.
Yeah.
The virus is mutated. It seems to be everywhere. It's particularly difficult and rife in our for our friends in the UK at the moment. Mm. The reason I say
not
it
they
is
they really care. They're still out and about.
Oh, right. There's only a lockdown pretty hard now.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to trivialise that, by the way. But our dear friends at Budgie Smuggler are ramping up their masks if that is something you need. And we do. We need masks.
Yeah.
And they'll be around if you'd like a mask that looks great, because some people like that, take it or leave it, you know, if not, no dramas. But if you would like a mask that looks great, the guys at Budgie Smuggler can make them for you. You can design your own. You can put whatever you want on there. You know the drill in relation to this.
As I went down to Brighton here in Melbourne on Saturday. Mm. Yeah, it was Saturday. And I was driving past a ground that I presume, I don't know Melbourne very well, but I don't know what ground it was, but I presumed it was a great cricket ground. Just looked great cricket, like lower grade stuff. And
did you watch the ball? Like crane your head around while you were driving?
Yeah, I almost got an accident.
Unsafely, yeah. So you could evaluate the ball and your score in relation to it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yes, I did. Just a bit back of length, actually. I wouldn't actually say that field. And I just had that instinct. I didn't have the instinct. I was driving with my lady friend to lunch.
I saw this.
It was a sunny day. A mate, fucking you and...
Well, yeah. You put it up on Insta.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. I was hiding too. On Instagram, yeah.
From a brand perspective.
Thank you to the 30 people who replied, got a girlfriend, do you?
Yeah.
Actually fucking scroll through my message across. Anyway, so I was driving like to lunch and beautiful sunny day. And I was just thinking like, I'm driving to a happier life. And then I was thinking about people who drive past cricket grounds yelling out, how's that? Why is that the instinct? And then I was thinking, put it on a face mask. How's that on the face mask?
Ah, nice. There'll be people out there in light of last few days who'll want to put pictures of Smith crying and Warner crying and stuff on there. Mm. I wouldn't advise it, but the point is it's your right and that I'm sure the Budgie Smuggler guys will upload it, you know, if you want.
Mm.
Just trying to give you a few ideas and spitball. I personally wouldn't.
Yeah, that would be weird seeing Smith's face at a press conference on your mouth.
I played soccer with a bloke once. He's an English guy. And living in Australia, he was not good. a huge Liverpool fan.
Yeah, right.
And his number plate, a personalised number plate, was Hate United. H
Hate. That's fucking
United.
That's fucking.
It was more like
that's shit.
Why focus on the thing you don't like rather than the thing you like? But,
yeah.
Anyway, this is a long way of saying Budgie Smuggler are doing masks. that may or may not assist you with the mutant virus.
Get round
them. When I say that, I'm not saying that I'm against masks. No, I think masks work.
Now, that's different to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, isn't it?
And yet it still feels the same when you say mutant. I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Same.
Raphael Forever. Boys.
Same. Jeez. When I was a kid, I used to have a full turtle suit costume.
He was angry, Raphael.
Was he?
Yeah. I think he was a sledger.
Had some dad stuff.
Yeah. He's just grumpy.
Yeah.
Broody. Okay. But he might have a reason for that.
Where does Splinter come in?
It was the master.
Yeah.
Master Splinter. BudgieSmuggler.com. champ for free shipping.
Hashtag us. TGC. Now.
Here we go.
Strap
in.
Woo. Hell of a week in the cricket. All right. Let's just get into it.
Come on.
Anon. I'm nervous, man.
No, don't be nervous. It's a great story.
Dear Higgs chap and Pez chap, probably best this one stays anonymous. I'm a 27-year-old working for the NHS as a COVID tester.
Good
I
on you.
I haven't... You can't say that without being like, yeah, good on you, mate.
Yeah, true.
Like going to a dinner party. Thanks for coming. Oh, why is that a send-off?
TFC award.
I haven't played...
All right.
I haven't played cricket in about 5 years after ending my career playing a bit of second and third 11 stuff, but still follow the game. And your podcast means that cricket seems to be rooted deep in my subconscious, as it is with so many of us. An important factor to note is that I'm also a gay bloke. Not usually a relevant factor, but quite important in relation to this story I'm submitting to two strangers on the internet in the hope it might raise a few cheap laughs. There's a whole discussion around me being gay and the fact my dad ran away when I was 18 months old, but maybe that's for another day. About a month ago, I was bored out of my life at home and decided to stroll through the gay dating app Grindr. It's important to say that although it's described as a dating app, it's more often used as a casual sex hookup app for guys. I received a message from a guy asking if I wanted to go to his and have a threesome with him and his boyfriend. Pics were exchanged, they were attractive enough, and they'd caught me in the right mood, so to speak. So I made the short drive and arrived at their house. Making my way into the house, I found them both in the living room. Fuck. Now, I'm not the most awkward person going, but also I never really know what to say in these situations. Luckily for me, after years of listening to the Grade Cricketer podcast, my subconscious knew exactly what to say. For some inexplicable reason, the greeting I chose was to bellow out, "Boys!"
Come on.
A la Brendan Julian. As shocked as I was at this, I was even more shocked to find that one of my potential chops got the reference. Standing up, he said, "Oh, great cricketer." After a short conversation about cricket, hardly foreplay, we did the deed. I won't go into too much detail here, but there was a moment where the geography of our threesome meant that I was facing the fellow TGC fan, and this is where things escalated. I'm sorry to say, I poked him in the eye. I don't know what came over me, but I just couldn't help myself. It's almost as if the talk of TGC precoitus had stirred up my desire to amuse myself by assaulting another man while I was penetrating his boyfriend. Needless to say, I found it hilarious. While he got the reference, the victim of my eye poke was pretty hacked off as his boyfriend was wondering what the hell was going on. The sex was ruined and I duly left, still chuckling to myself on the drive home. My questions are as follows. Because I'm a COVID tester, can I now say I've made my test taboo and done a bit of test stuff? Are you boys proud of yourself that your content has such reach that you've infiltrated gay group sex? Should I go around again? I still sometimes chat about with my old GM hero, and clearly the fact I managed to deliberately jab the tip of my finger into someone's eye during sex means my hand-eye coordination is still pretty good. Thanks, boys! Anon.
What's the one? Just the physical symptoms. I'm sweating again.
I'm at work, man. Yeah. I'm working right now.
I don't know, man.
So he's walked into a threesome, and his instinct was to go, "Boys!"
You know.
Fuck me.
You know. It's not about cricket, is it?
What, this show? The,
yeah.
Oh, no. No, I know that. What are you supposed to do with that?
No, well, I can't do much with that other than to say, yes, I am proud. That's made
it's
my
day. It's got great reach.
It's made my day. Yeah. Truly.
When I first read that, I was like, is this real? Like, is that actually happened?
His son got a creative mind.
Yeah.
No, I believe it's too real.
It's too real. It's too real.
Yeah. If you've had a strange TGC
during group sex,
tell us the weirdest place TGC was referenced.
And Non, that's great. Yeah. I appreciate the story. Thank you. Well written. Well done.
Very well done.
That's Hall of Fame for me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. I was fucking in tears during that first time. Just got off the phone from my son on FaceTime down the coast, 2 years old. Fuck, Dad's got to go back to work. Okay, we happy?
Yeah.
Bob wrote.
Well, two questions there.
Bob writes, yeah, it's a deep question. Isn't it? Yeah. Evening, fellas. I'm writing to you from the empty front room of my family home during a Christmas holiday evening. It's empty because Mum's out and my father has chosen to spend the last hour outside alone with a beer, as it's, inverted commas, quite a nice evening. For context, I'm a UK listener. It's currently -1 degree outside and he'd rather sit in the pitch dark than spend time with me. But enough about that man who is my father in name only. My real issue is about the true big daddy of my life, and by that I of course refer to the alpha of my cricket team. I'm 25 and have played once for my club for a few years now as a lanky opening bowler to a decent UK amateur level. It's no Sydney Test cricket, but then if I wanted to be abused for 8 hours by men with identity issues, I would stay at home with my biological father and save myself the match fee.
Poignant.
The undisputed... We actually play Reggio.
Yeah, yeah.
Match fee is fucking...
Yeah.
The undisputed alpha of our club is late 30s and part of a family dynasty that has been the backbone of our club for generations. He obviously also plays ones, fields at first slip, and opens the batting with typical alpha attitude. To illustrate, last season he'd been caught long on for a 13-ball 38 in the third over of a game and return over a boundary quipping, "I was just in one of those moods where everything had to go."
Fuck. I can imagine that.
Exactly, yeah. He later regaled us mere mortals with the story of a 20-something him snapping his banjo string whilst chopping our teammate's then recently divorced mother-in-law on the hallway stairs of their family home, whilst our teammate's then girlfriend, now wife, slept blissfully unaware in an upstairs bedroom.
Can I stop there, mate?
Yeah.
What's snapping his banjo string? Is he talking about his dick?
I presume he means his penis, yeah.
Okay, right. He snapped his dick whilst chopping our teammate's then recently. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah. The Alpha had been talking about retiring at the end of last season. Shock horror, he's actually going round again. And in typical style, started brazenly dissecting the credentials of all of us, his teammates, as candidates to replace him as Alpha. He looked me dead in the eyes and smirked. "Decent chat and a good length penis, but I just can't have someone with that physical stature replace me."
Mate, your penis is a good length. What? What? Why are you saying that to me?
Just imagine. Fuck. Decent chat and a good length penis, but I just can't have someone with that physical stature replace me. Well, I mean, what needs to go wrong in life to get to that point?
Yeah.
I feel out of breath seeing the quote written out in black and white, but it could be that I've just finished my newly prescribed chest and arms workout routine.
Could be. Could I don't know. I just want to put that in.
Look at out of breath writing.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, he came to the conclusion that none of us were worthy and he was in fact irreplaceable. Yet somehow I feel closer than other contenders. He publicly states that he enjoys our verbal alpha jousting and we have similar interests outside of cricket, recently being invited into his inner circle for midweek beers before lockdown. My question to you is this. With the usual avenues of boosting social capital, such as shower chub-ups, loose drinking behaviour and tall sexual tales, being on hold during the third UK lockdown, how do I seek his approval and ascend to alphadom next season? Is the answer in relentless gym work, better scene presentation, or is all this all wasted energy and am I doomed to social mediocrity? And more importantly, why the fuck is my dad still outside? Love the pod. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Bob.
Yeah, okay. Now, people might wonder, Pez, how we got to the situation where the great cricketer exists and how we got to the stage of what the Australian captain was saying during a test match. I just read that a couple of times. All there. It's all there. Now, I'm fascinated with the I'm recently fascinated with the perception of the faux alpha, the person who thinks that they're alpha and they'll say that they're alpha. Now, there's nothing less alpha, as we keep saying. There's nothing less alpha than announcing yourself as the alpha.
Oh, yeah. It's a great paradox. And it's complex.
Exactly. It is complex. There's a few levels to it. And you need to listen to this for 8 years to understand it. I don't really know what this question is about other than there being the immediate representation and presentation of male toxic relationships with each other.
And the problem Bob's got, because Bob's question on face value is like, what do I need to do to become alpha? Now, the problem Bob has, having read his, literature.
Yes.
He's, Bob, I'm sorry, but I think you may be too self-aware to become an out-and-out alpha.
He's sort of mocking, his...
because everywhere he looks... Whether it be his adopted father or his actual father, he sees toxic alphadom.
Yeah.
And he's trying to go down the conventional paths to achieve that as well. What is the pull of becoming the out-and-out alpha when you are able to see? Like, you're through the looking glass, Bob. Mm. You can only be that style of alpha if you've got no fucking clue what's going on around you, really. It might be a nice life. I wanted to know more about him joining the inner city work beers of this guy, because usually what happens in cricket is once you actually join the other an outside circle of someone who might have a particular character at the club, around their other mates they don't have that character.
They don't have a character,
They usually get worked pretty hard by people with lives and other things that, that are happening.
I was thinking about this because, you know, when people like move overseas and like they can be happy in certain they move like in a different friendship circle. For a lot of people, let's say in Australia, you move to London or whatever, right? I'm not talking about you, not talking about me. I'm just talking about like generally, like a lot of Australians move to London.
Yeah, we do.
And And it's like they can be the version of themselves they want to be there because they're starting a new life.
Mm.
Now, what they'll tend to do is they'll tend to then associate with people they just knew back in Sydney but live in like Clapham Junction.
Yeah. Aussies go over to the UK and make heaps of mates with Aussies.
Yeah. Where should we go? Walkabout? Yeah. That'd be a good place to mingle.
Mm.
So yeah, but it's like when you're in the cricket club, that can be a version of yourself that you might want to be, but you're also just like mirroring and sort of like monkey see, monkey doing with like the people that were the alphas, your predecessors, the people who were first graders and second graders when you started in fifth grade and fourth grade. You're just like, oh, that's, if I want to play in that level, I've got to be like them. I won't reach their athletic ability or their skill set. I'll just be like them.
Mm.
And then you move yourself out of the cricket club and you become a different person. We had a question during hashtag RCGC Fridays on Patreon last week about like the language you use around grade cricket. And it's like, they're two different people. You come home from a day of grade cricket, you spend 8 hours with a group of dysfunctional men and you're swearing all the time. Because, you know, I've never sworn on this podcast. Mm. And then you have to like check yourself when you go back into society.
Yeah.
it's like a conjugal visit.
Yeah.
And you come back and you're like, oh no, I'm a different person now. So Bob's kind of like caught up in this. He's caught up.
He's still aware. I remember when I moved to Melbourne in 2011, I hadn't played grade cricket for like a year or two. Right. And I arranged to go and play grade cricket at St Kilda, which is like quite an established, famous club down here in Melbourne.
Yep.
And
they're a good team now.
Yeah. I've always been really strong. And okay, right. I always worn the clubs off. Club mates. And we went on as part of a ones, twos, like trial, we went away to the country.
Okay.
And for a couple of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, out at the pub and all that kind of gear. Yep. And like I just, you know, immediately got straight back into grade cricket chat. It does. Like, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah.
And I just remember getting home, my grandma had actually come down to see me, and she was with my, you know, then girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they'd like made dinner and straight away went, oh, result. And as I said that, I knew that it had started influencing me again. It felt quite good.
Yeah. Walk in, boys.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think you're too far gone, Bob. I don't think you're going to be the alpha that you will say here that you want to be. I just think you got to crack on just being yourself there, brother.
Pez, last one for this week.
Yep.
Matthew Taylor. Dear Pezzy, Lad and Higrat, I must say, in riposte to your theory that all girls hate cricket.
Sorry. Can we test that premise?
Never said that.
Straw man argument. Build it up to knock it down. So let's just, for argument's sake, let Matthew carry on here.
Well, he says, I have some evidence to the contrary.
That's good, because we agree.
I've never said that.
Like, you have like a Lisa Healy on the show and all those guys like, oh, all girls hate cricket. Carry on.
One Hinge girl earlier this summer asked if I wanted to come over to hers on a Friday night for drinks last minute. But I couldn't, as I had already returned from London to Farnham, rural Surrey, to play threes the next day. I explained my predicament and she told me she loved cricket and asked me to send her photos of me and some cricket whites. She told me her favourite player was Stuart Broad, so I'm not sure how I compare. We eventually went on a Tuesday night date, yuck, which didn't work out. Timing is everything, so I feel this was just another example of Saturday cricket ruining my sex life. Stupidly, I told my teammates of the aforementioned events, which led to ridicule in the stretching circle the following week. I disappointed all my teammates who anticipated an interesting sex story. I decided to tell the truth and accept the humiliation. As a 26-year-old who performed adequately in the dating game, I didn't feel a sense of shame and have accepted failure occurs from time to time. I have also had other dates where I have been left perplexed as I've been asked how the World Chess Championship point system works and who is England's best bowler. Maybe it's just the fact that I operate in the West London Hinge ecosystem where the demographic of girls I usually go out with is posh, privately educated from home counties, but there is a genuine interest for cricket amongst the female community. But my main question is, how do I answer such questions without sounding like a cuck? The question of England's best bowler is obviously dependent on conditions and the format. How do I explain this in an interesting way? How the fuck does the World Test Championship work? Should I have lied to my teammates and made up a fake sex story? Or is that even more sad? Thoughts? Kind regards, Matthew. Now, as I read that on, I realised what Matthew's saying. I think I had said in the past, like in my dating life, and I'd spoken to like a lot of people would say like, they'll say like, I got no interest in cricket. And that's been my experience. Got but I've never said that like, never said that all women hate cricket.
Mm. Even if they play deep down, they hate it.
We all hate it.
You said that, yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. What's the point?
Yeah, what's the difference?
Oh, I can hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Matthew's found himself in a Hinge eco dating system with home counties in West London.
Yeah. But I don't get it, because isn't he saying that in his experience some girls actually like cricket, so yeah. shouldn't he? Like, and he's got a lot of conversational topics that he'd like to raise with them around, you know, the relativism of fast bowling rankings, the World Test Championship, and confusion thereof.
Mm. Not to be confused with Confucius.
Yeah. I thought you said World Chess Championships there before, which would be interesting no, from a cricket perspective.
I read what I wanted to read.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how the World Test Championship works.
I don't know how it works.
Aren't so New Zealand number one in the world at the moment, aren't they? But Australia's atop the table of the World Test Championship. So yeah, it's different rankings.
Different things, mate. Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. So they might finish number one and not be in the final at Lord's.
So how it works is the...
Oh, this will be good.
Let me tell you how it works. No, there's each system, each test series is worth 120 test championship points. And so that's how like a five test Ashes series can be the same weighting as like England, as like a Pakistan and New Zealand of like two tests or three tests or whatever they're playing. Or the West Indies are two tests. That's also 120 test points up for grabs in that series. Because obviously there's only three teams who played more test cricket than anyone else. That's how they're balancing it out. That's how
Australia's at the top despite having fewer points than India because they've won a higher percentage of their matches or something as
Fuck
well.
Me, I don't know.
That's how
that.
You get the points, yeah. So, yeah, just raise that on your dates, Matthew. That should be good. That should be good for your sex life.
Well, I suppose what he's asking is, like, how do you talk about cricket in a non-cuck way? You got to be cool about it, don't you? I think in that instance you would have to, like, you know, if your date wants to be, like, if your date wants to bring cricket to the conversation, go for it, man. But I wouldn't be bringing it up first.
I think it's an interesting question because, as you say, can you talk about cricket in a dating context without sounding like a cuck? Now, I'm just thinking about, okay, well, who's the best player to have ever played that might still be dating? Shane Warne. How would he talk about – I think Warne wouldn't be talking about cricket.
He barely talks about cricket when he's commentating the cricket.
That's true. Is that possible? Can you make cricket sexy if you're talking about the game?
If I ever talk about it with a female partner, I'll be very flippant about it. Oh, yeah. Oh, just give it a whack.
Explain that.
Because we're watching the Big Bash on our first date.
Okay.
And Chris Lynn's batting.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm not sure how you can sound cool talking about cricket.
Yeah, so don't.
Really.
Be good or fuck off. Bring that in. Thank you very much to Darvin Milan for joining the Great Cricket Podcast. And we hope, from our perspective, that he maintains his number one ranking as T20 best batsman in the world or some shit.
So much respect.
So disrespectful.
This whole show has been about Australian respect.
Exactly. Yeah. Fuck. Whatever, mate. You give it a hit. Yeah. Go out there. Give it a bash.
Now. Yeah. You play a couple of T20 eyes, do you?
It's very nice, man. Thank you much for joining us. Thank you for everyone out there listening or watching or wherever you are in the world. Thank you very much. See you guys on Patreon on Friday. In fact, there's a special interview dropping on Thursday sometime.
Just check the feed.
See you guys next week.